prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond, 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 beyond. Greetings. It's July 29th, 2012. I seem to be broadcasting. All is well. Welcome to Ever Beyond. Tonight, I was wondering what I should talk about, and a couple of things have come up today, and so I will deal with them in the way I always deal with things that come in random method, and just blather about them until I can blather no more. The first thing that I'd like to talk about tonight is pyramids. Now, if anybody wishes to call in, you know my Skype connection. If you don't, we can carry... I can find ways of connecting with you if you call into the wolfspiritradio.com chat room. Most people know about it. You need to sign in with a nickname in order to speak in there, but you can connect and ask questions there. Otherwise, if you have my Skype address, which a lot of you do, do feel free in connecting with me. Yes, I've got you turned up on the mixer there. So if you wish to join in this conversation, or rather turn this monologue into a conversation, I'm very happy for you to join me on this. So let's talk about pyramids. Stuart Swerdlow's show earlier on, which... because it was recorded at an hour early, I also played it at its normal time, and so we had a chance to listen to it twice. Dr. Osmanić, the discoverer of the Bosnian pyramids. It turns out these Bosnian pyramids are the biggest pyramids in the world. They're 50% larger than the Giza pyramid. The great so-called Great Pyramid is not is now the lesser pyramid, because the Bosnian pyramid of the moon is bigger. It's very interesting. It has obviously, because it's in a little different, less focused on country. You know, most people, when they think of Bosnia, they think, oh, there's a war there, wasn't there? But it appears to have a vast amount of archaeological data there, almost undisturbed. It's quite amazing. And since this is the time of the secrets revealed, here's another segment of the puzzle. What the good doctor was talking about earlier was that the whole world is covered in pyramids. There are thousands of them. There are pyramids in America. They're under the soil. One of the things that we've discovered about these, you know, because Egypt is in this kind of dry, kind of barren kind of countryside, it's the stone of the pyramids is exposed. But if you go further north, where there's more weather, you know, more rain, then very quickly the vegetation starts to cover it, and what we find is that in Northern Europe, in Bosnia and in England, there are pyramid structures, but we're not recognizing them as pyramid structures because, well, they've been they've been hills, you know, because they're covered in grass. And one of them, now, you know, I can't talk about the Bosnian pyramids because I have no experience of them, but I have had experience of the pyramid that we call Silbury Hill. It was about 1993. I was standing down the road from it, and I just caught it. It was just the way the sun was catching it. I could see that it actually had flattened sides, and four distinct corners. Although it's kind of often portrayed as a kind of round thing, you know, it's like a circular kind of appearance, because that's the way the farmer goes around it with his field. So out from this square structure is actually rippling out circles, because that's the way the farmer deals with it. So that's how it looks on, you know, when you're looking at photographs of it. But the essence is very different from that. So my personal belief is that Silbury Hill is an ancient pyramid structure, that it was covered over in grass, and that's what he's saying the Bosnian pyramid is. So that's one data point I believe I can agree with. His pyramid, the Bosnian pyramid, is aligned to the sun, to the north-south axis of the planet. Okay, let me just backtrack a little bit. The axis of the planet is not the magnetic grid, but this is the geographical location of the northernmost part of our planet. The Giza pyramid is accurate to that within, now what do you say? It was something like 6 minutes of a degree. The Bosnian pyramid is about 60 times more accurate. It's like 12 seconds of a minute of a degree, sort of out from the geographic north. So it's pretty accurately aligned. And also, it turns out that all the other pyramids on the planet are aligned in this way. No, not all of them. Some of them in South America aren't, but I have to find out about that. Strawberry Hills, no, Silbury Hill, and also not Salisbury Hill. Salisbury Hill is the one that Peter Gabriel sings about, and that's a hill that overlooks Bath. Bath is down the road from Stonehenge in Wiltshire. I used to live down there, and so I knew all these places. Stonehenge is near Avebury. And actually, what I'm saying is Stonehenge is near Amesbury. God, this is confusing. All these silly little names. Stonehenge is near Amesbury, but Silbury Hill is near Avebury. There's also Glastonbury Tor, but that's not very pyramid-like at all. That's just a funky hill that they... I was looking at the Olympic thing yesterday, and there's this kind of exaggerated version of Glastonbury Tor in the Olympic ring. I'll maybe speak about Glastonbury Tor later, because I had experience of that as well. Anyway, so back to the pyramids of Europe, and... So it turns out that there are pyramids all over the place, and there are pyramids in China, and a lot of them are covered in grass, but they're all lined in the right way. And it also turns out that there are pyramids in America. There's a valley that has been completely filled up with silt since the days when the pyramids were there, and there's hundreds of pyramids in there. And so what we'll find is that a lot of them have been accreted on. There's stuff on top of them, the sand and silt and other deposits that have buried them, and then they're buried in a covering of grass and trees, and essentially we can't see them anymore. But they do become visible from satellite, and no doubt that the powers that be have had them mapped. They know where they are, because you can see them from certain satellites, with certain energy signatures. Oh, that's the other cool thing about the Bosnian pyramid. It emits a frequency of 28 kilohertz, and that seems to be quite a healing frequency. I've yet to find out what that note is. I'll have to find that out later. Yes, if anybody wants to check out the Bosnian pyramid thing, take this, put it in your favorites, and I'll stick it in the chat room there. And have a look at that. That's Dr. Osmanogic. Oh, it's a very difficult name for me. Osmanogic. Anyway, so there we are. we have pyramids all over the place. And oh, there's another thing. Yes, yeah, so let's talk about. See, tonight I want to just lay out. I'm sure a lot of you know the stuff that I'm going to come out with tonight. But I'm just kind of just, I just feel like sort of rattling it all off and little factoids that, you know, add color and texture to the big picture. And so we have the idea. There's a certain NASA employee or ex-employee or press officer or fellow talks about this thing he calls the face on Mars. And by all accounts, this thing is unique and it's weird. And it well, okay, let's talk about it. It's in an area of Mars which is called Cydonia. This area has very interesting characteristics. There's one structure, and this structure, from certain angles, appears to be a face. There's another structure there. That one appears to be a five-sided pyramid. There's another one that is like a spiral. These things are massive. You know, the face is about a kilometer wide. Yeah, that's big. You know, it really is. You know, it puts the Olympic Stadium to shame. You know, puts the Great Pyramid to shame. What's also interesting about this is that the angles between these stars, I'm ahead of the game. The angles between these pyramids also map onto the angles between various star formations. This particular man, yes, Mr. Hoagland, is also talking about its relationship to the 19.5 degree angle, in that there are certain, you know, angular structures within this that are angled at this 19.5 degree. What does 19.5 degree mean? Well, he says it's the hyperdimensional number, but that's it. That's what he says, right? But essentially, we're talking about a geometric form. This geometric form is known as a star tetrahedron, which is two tetrahedrons that are interfaced, pointing away from each other. So they make what looks like a three-dimensional Star of David. This tetrahedron is apparently, this is like a three-dimensional version of the kinematic figures. All right, kinematic is when you put sand on a plate and you vibrate the plate, and the sand forms into these pictures. All right, it's because the way that sound creates volumes and things, and when you find certain frequencies, that certain frequencies produce a certain form, a certain shape. And you can even look at, and you can see various forms that look like different bones in the spine at certain groups of frequencies. So it turns out that sound forms everything. That's something that we've always been told about in these mystical things, but that sound actually does create forms. We see them in two dimension in kinematics, but eventually we'll figure out a way of making fluids that can project this into a three-dimensional pattern, and then we'll be able to actually see in three dimensions what a sound looks like. And I would say that if you did that with frequencies that are like a planet-sized frequencies, that you would get the star tetrahedron form and also the sphere form. And it turns out that the Earth is arranged in a star tetrahedral form, as well as all the other planets. And if you look at the Sun, and particularly now it's really active, and you look at the sunspots on the Sun, you'll see that they all occur along a sort of parallel lines. You know, there's a kind of upper one and a lower one. And if you were to take a star tetrahedral form, or even, you know, just stick with a Star of David on that, you'll find that those lines occur pretty close to the lines that you've just drawn on it. And this is because these hyperdimensional structures, as he calls them, subtend, which means they or in form, they form the pattern around which the planet is created. So it's like this thing is inside the crust of the Earth. It's a pattern. It's like a skeleton, what's the word, a scaffolding around which the planet is draped. We find that at these points on the Earth, if you imagine that the Earth had a star tetrahedron inside it, and it would fit pretty well, that if you would take those points and put them on the map of the planet, you'd end up with something like, I think Hawaii is on one of them. Oh God, I can't remember where all the different points are, but all these points are really like significant holy places. They've been revered and venerated all through history, and you know, Giza is one of them. Anyway, so it turns out that there are energetic spots. They may also have relevance to. There's also another grid, which is a dodecahedron, which is 10. Dodeca? No, that's 12. Yeah, 12-sided figure. There are two of those that also subtend inside the planet, and they would be representing as frequencies, and they create all these different spots. You know, it's like the, what they call them, like the Bermuda Triangle. You know, places like that are the points at, and you'd expect if they were, you know, points, they would have a vortex there. You know, if it's like, you know, inside the Earth, there's the enormous pyramids, and you're looking at the point of one of them, there'll be some kind of energy coming off the edge of that, wouldn't there? And that's what we get. And we find ourselves at hyperdimensional points, and people build structures on them, because if you take the energy and then build the structure on top of it, you can focus that energy and use it and direct it. And I believe that's what Tesla did when he built his Wardenclyffe Tower, that it was tapping the energy of a vortex there and able to transmit it anywhere on the planet. Thanks to J.P. Morgan, that didn't happen, and now we pay for electricity. So imagine if J.P. Morgan had not been convinced by Edison that we should meter it and that it could be given away for free, and maybe everything else that was made with electricity could be manufactured and sold, you know. So anyway, they decided to meter the energy, and thus we have the system that we have today. But Tesla used the energy of one of these points, and he was able to transmit it anywhere wirelessly. You know, you wouldn't need batteries for anything, and your mobile phones would work across this network, and we wouldn't be full of artificial frequencies. We'll just run along the natural frequencies of the planet. And presumably the solar system has a natural set of pathways in it as well. Ha! Meanwhile... so... there is also a relationship between the site of Cydonia and the village that I mentioned earlier called Avebury. Avebury is in the place called Wiltshire. It's a kind of... it's about two-thirds of the way from London to Bristol. And it's just about sort of in that sort of area. And it's full of sacred sites. What's called sacred sites. But essentially... it's one of these energy points, and it used to be made with there was enormous avenues of stones like they have in Carnac in France, that were like two serpents that coiled around the village, and many of the stones were taken away and broken up and made into the houses and things like that. But there are enough of the stones left, and enough of the big ditch, the henge is the opposite of the ditch, that's the form of Avebury. Now I know Avebury very well. In fact, I got married there at one point. There are two stone circles. You know, one inside the other one's one very small one, which is about, you know, 30 feet wide, The Stones aren't really there anymore. There's one or two little stumps, but the energy is still there, and it's a lovely energy. It's really a lovely place to be. It's the only stone work, it's an ancient work that has actually got a pub in the middle of it, and it's a wonderful place. And yeah, I went there last year with a friend of mine, and we bumped into a very interesting woman who was in the shadows. Her name was Faith, and we were just walking out the pub, and out of the shadows came this strange woman called Faith, who took us to a place where the Crop Circle pub was. Anyway, long story. Very interesting. Faith emerged from the shadows, and it was a very beautiful little visit there. That's when I went down to the south of England last year sometime. So yes, Mars, pyramids on Mars. So the pyramid on Mars at Sidona has five sides, of all things. It's pretty regular. It's not like it's a kind of, you know, natural artifact. That is absolutely, definitely geometrically aligned, and it appears that there's alignment in the placing of these things. Now, what's very interesting is that Avebury is next to the pyramid that we call Silbury Hill. It's, you know, it's only like half a mile away, and I think it's at the end of one of the serpents. It's like there's a kind of what they call a ceremonial procession that goes down these avenues from one place to the other. So this is the idea that humans carry energy with them, and perhaps it's like a kind of interjunction where you have to pick up energies at one point, take them down the avenue, and deposit them at the other. There's some kind of idea about that, some kind of idea of like having a Stonehenge and Glastonbury Tor and Avebury all kind of connected in a triangular form. There are meditations that go on. You know, people do these meditations between the three places in England in an attempt to, in a way, nullify the effects of the Dark Lodge from doing things like the opening ceremonies and stuff like that. Hello, Simon. Good to see you, mate. So, yes, we were talking about Avebury, and what it appears is that the formation of the face on Mars, the five-sided pyramid, and the spiral, and the da-da-da-da-da, exactly map on, if you were to make a transparency. What are you doing? Sorry, my cat is dive-bombing my socks. If you take the Sidonia picture and place it on top of a picture of Avebury and Silbury Hill, they'll map on exactly. There's a kind of exact parallel there. So there's something in it. Whether that's the same form as a star system, like the star cluster called Pleiades, or whether it's anything to do with the stars of the Milky Way in the way that the pyramids... Oh, did you know this? The pyramids in Giza reflect the three stars of the belt of Orion, Mintaka, Alnitak, and Alnilam. That there are for Rigel and Bellatrix, there are corresponding sites in Egypt, and so that the Nile represents the Milky Way, and the and Orion represents is represented as these different pyramids. So that we have this same kind of form on our planet. It's just that we don't really you know, it doesn't figure. Now I've been thinking about this, and you know, one of the things that I heard was that it may be that there were, you know, that was a base on Mars, Giza was at one point, it was a base for certain groups of extraterrestrials. That's what we're told anyway. So perhaps the star form that appears on the ground in terms of these different pyramids and sites may be an indicator as to the origin of these people. It's a bit like, you know, you place, you might have a building that is shaped like the Stars and Stripes, for instance, if you were American, and you, you know, if you went to the moon, you'd make a big structure that looked like the Stars and Stripes, so that when your people were flying over it, just, ah, there's our symbol. Or you could put a human face there, for instance, and it was, oh, right, that's obviously one of ours, and, you know, we're likely to be friendly, so we can land there. That would make sense, although I'm not well-versed in extraplanetary navigation. I would imagine that that would be quite a good way that people would do that, to indicate that, you know, this is a friendly place, and perhaps there's structures like this on every planet that exists in the galaxy. I'd like to hear some confirmation on that. The Hoover Dam. Yeah, that's right. So this is so it's lovely to have you all in the chat room there. Tonight I'm talking about pyramids, and also later on I'd like to talk about the various belief systems of proposed candidates for the New World Order religion. So we'll talk about that later. But the pyramid. Now, a couple of people in the chat room earlier were talking about building pyramids, making them out of copper, and this is something that is something that I actually used to do, or that I occasionally do in my life. You know, once every few years, I get to building a pyramid. I get to, you know, you have to get in the right mood for it. You feel drawn to do it, and sometimes you might even have a vision of it. You know, you wake up in the morning and you see a pyramid, and it's made of copper, and it's, you know, it's in your head, and it's there every morning, and it will drive you mad. So you go to the internet and you might think, oh, how do I make a copper pyramid? And so there are various places. It was about 20 years ago that I started actually making bronze pyramids, and here I have one I prepared earlier. I have one left from the hundreds that I made at the time. I don't know if you can hear this, but this is, that's its little, I don't know if you can hear it ringing, there's like a little ring sound. Oops. Yes. I wonder what that fizzing noise was. If you have a copper pyramid, it's a very nice thing to sleep in. One of the things that Dr. Osmanogic was talking about was the fact that underneath the pyramids there was a tunnel system, and inside the tunnel system was they were so deeply underground that they were shielded from just about everything, and there were no magnetic flux lines, there were no electromagnetic grid lines, there was no radiation from the sun, nothing got down there, and that they would find that people would suddenly start healing spontaneously, and that's because that the human body will heal. But on the surface of this planet, we are subject to so many attacking forces, you know, the least of which is stuff like Wi-Fi. But it's quite a hostile environment up here, and that's why a lot of the galactics are very impressed by our ability to survive on this planet, because it's, like, really toxic. And sorry, I've just seen something in the chat room that's rather tickled me. Well done, Bright Eyes. I'm glad you have. we have a kind of archetypal design of a pyramid, and that's the one that we call the Giza Pyramid, the Great Pyramid. It seems that one is the most, you know, the one that's lasted the longest. It's really kind of obvious. even though having lasted for however long it's lasted for, it was more than it used than it is now. It used to have a capstone. It used to have white limestone casing covers, polished limestone. It used to be shiny white. Could you imagine that? Flying over a place, and there, reflecting the sun, was this shiny white pyramid beaming out. How cool that must have been. That would have been like, oh, radar beam, radar beacon. Yeah? There's a friendly place. Oh, look, it's the symbol of Orion. Maybe we won't land there. Anyway. little Pleiadian joke there. If you are an astute student of pyramidology, you'll know that there's a special angle involved with the pyramid. And this angle has a relationship to it's called phi, PHI, and it's known as the golden ratio. It's a natural number. It's a number that occurs all over nature. It is the ratio, for instance, between your phalanges, the little bones in your fingers, the one at the tip of the finger and the one at the next one down. They have a ratio of their length, and that ratio is this ratio of phi, 1.618. It also describes the nautilus shell, the spinning squares, the golden section, the size of a credit card, the way a tree grows, the way planets grow, everything. It is the natural number, phi. Now, this number features in the pyramid in terms of the ratio. I just want to go a little bit into the maths of it, because it's fascinating, and I had to do it, so I've got a kind of experience with this. I was commissioned by our meditation group at the time to create some pyramids, make them out of bronze welding rods, they're about 9 inches. The square base is 9 inches exactly, and the pyramid works out about 5.5-6 inches high. And this measurement is exactly 1/1000th of the size of the Great Pyramid. So it's got a kind of link in with Giza. So if I align this north south, it starts creating a nice little vortex in the middle. And a little breeze. You can feel a little cool breeze out of the top if you place the palm of your hand on top of it. It's very much like the cool breeze that comes out of a crystal. I don't know if you know, but if you take a quartz crystal and point one end at your palm of the other hand, you'll feel a kind of cool breeze in the palm of your hand. Just like a little breath, a little whisper breath. And if you have a pyramid like this, and this AI started making them, I made a little jig. that's not a dance; it's a piece of steel with the angles specifically put in there, and something to put the make the top, because bronze at certain temperature becomes just like orange juice. So I used an oxyacetylene torch and made up these, and I suppose I must have made a couple of hundred at least. Once they were made into little pyramids, you could then make them into an array, so you could then solder them together. You'll use lead-free solder as well. You don't use lead or tin or lead or aluminium. Or iron, really, in the making of these things. The frequency works best with the copper, so the copper-based things like bronze. And bronze is lovely because it's quite strong. You can drop one of these things and it just bounces. It won't bend like copper will. That's the trouble with making big copper pyramids. They do get bent really easily. And the fate of the one that I showed people on my Facebook was that it was completely trampled by a bunch of cows that entered the garden once last year. And so the poor thing is no more. I might try and make it like a little 1 foot size pyramid out of what remains, but it's quite a trampled remains. So, yes, so making your own pyramid is something that I would so totally recommend. If you have welding abilities, you could make a nice little business making bronze pyramids. Meditation groups all over the world are getting more and more interested in them, and we'd certainly link into you with Wolf Spirit Radio. So if you're out of work and you're thinking, what could I do? I could give you a couple of ideas that would make your day. So anyway, you can take the pyramid that you create, that you've been mass producing, and you can take seven of them, solder them together, and then string them up with a with a couple of pieces of strong wire, like piano wire, and you can turn them into a bow shape, so that creates like a parabolic effect. If you you can take three or four of these arrays, you can put four of these arrays, align them north-south, and you're in a completely psychic, you know, it's like an ultimate tinfoil hat. You'll be in a completely impenetrable neutral zone by being in the middle of this. These are amazing chi generators, like Organite, but on a much larger scale. What they call them? Yes, a Leviton generator. That's the thing. When I was working and I made one of these things, and my girlfriend came in at the time, and she just stepped into the room, and I said, "How do you feel?" She said, "It's funny, as I walked into here, I feel like jumping for joy." And I said, "Well, hey, that's exactly what it's for." And so completely independently, she totally proved the idea of the thing that I was working on, that I'd just been asked to make. So a Leviton generator is seven pyramids strung together in a parabola, and you can stand in front of it and feel absolute joy. If you know somebody who can weld, or if you know somebody who can cast in bronze, you can start. You can make a prototype and make castings of them. That would probably be the fastest way of making one of these things. It's quite an involved process. You got to cut the bronze to exactly the right size and have a jigs and acetylene welding. It's acetylene. Yeah, well, the joy is yours. I mean, the joy just is. Joy is an energy. Everything is an energy. And joy exists everywhere. What we find ourselves subject to are gravitons, which, if you think about gravity, a grave situation, it's the same root. Grave and gravity are heavy, heaviness. And levity is the opposite of gravity. So, in fact, if you have an energy which is opposite of gravity, it will be very light, and it will possibly make you feel lighter in weight, make you feel like jumping for joy, indeed. I'm always reminded, when I'm speaking about this kind of subject, Mary Poppins. And they go around to his house and, look at his door, and he's laughing. And they all look in the door, and he's up on the ceiling in his chair, and he's laughing away. And they can't get him off the ceiling because he's just so happy. This is an obvious expression of Leviton behavior. Anyway, so this is one of the things that can be produced using pyramids arranged in various ways. Now, I've seen one of these things. I'll see if I can it was on YouTube recently that I was finding this thing, and it's Dr. Fred Bell, who's out of Ventura, California. Is it Ventura? No. Somewhere in California. Anyway, he's dead now, but he had these things, and you can see them actually in action on his wall. And this is something that he made in the 90s, and you know, this is about 20 years ago that I was doing this as well. So these are parallel things that they're doing, and essentially they were creating machines for ascension, for joy, for you know, for eliminating gravity. And one of the things that I've found is that if you sit in a pyramid, it's impossible to hold a negative thought. This is what I'm talking about, gravity and levity. You know, it's these are real things, and levity really is the absence of gravity. You know, it's a natural state of things. And, you know, when things are very natural, when everybody's feeling natural, everybody's very happy, it's normal. And that's exactly what happens when you're experiencing levitons. So you can wear one of these pyramids. That, you know, I made the pyramids for wearing on the head. We can have the plating, silver plating and gold plating. That added another extra kind of refined energy surface to it. The gold, well, I love the gold ones, they were lovely. Never actually owned one myself, but tried them a couple of times, and that is a very lovely, very, very happy, very, very clean energy with these things. So, yeah, well, it would, yes, it's... If you were interested in building these things, you know, I can have a word, you know, and describe what I know. But essentially, if you want to build a pyramid, I would really recommend it. You can start if you want, all right? So the really easiest way of doing one is you can take some drinking straws, and the ratio between the base of a pyramid and the arms of a pyramid have to be carefully worked out, and that's what involves the phi parameter. However, it works out to around 95% or 96% of the length of the base. So if you have a base of 6 feet, it would be 5 feet something, you know, whatever the 95% was, and so on. And so you can take a couple of drinking straws, and you can make a mock-up version of a pyramid. You could maybe flatten the ends, you know, put it into some hot water, flatten the ends, poke a hole through the ends with a red-hot needle, and pin them together, or maybe staple them together, I don't know. But it would be very, very simple to make a pyramid out of that. You could then scale that up. You could take some broadsheet newspapers and roll them up. Make long poles out of those, cut the ends, and again, staple the ends together, and you could make a newspaper pyramid. You could probably make one about, you know, 2 or 3 feet high. You know, you could put a pet in one of those or something like that. You can make them out of solid cardboard, obviously, like the old days of the 70s with the razor blade experiments and things like that. You can make them all sorts of materials. It would be interesting, for instance, to make an organite one. That would be quite interesting. And yes, I've got sorry. Chem, can you afford drinking straws? Bless his heart, he's out of work. But, you know, I'm sure if you got resourceful, you could find stuff that you can make pyramids out of. I don't really want to give away all of the process of it. The reason is, I would like you guys to work it out. Because what I found is that it was an incredibly civilizing thing for me to do, to actually go through the process of finding out how to build a pyramid. Because I had to go back to my schoolboy mathematics, my geometry, my trigonometry, my calculus. Calculus? No, I didn't. Was it calculus? Algebra. No, not calculus. Algebra. I always mix up those two. Go back into algebra and geometry and angles and sines and trigonometry, and just work out from first principles exactly, if I was, you know, a dedicated engineer, how I would build one with exactly the right proportions to get me to exactly the right angle to make the 51 degrees 51 minutes of the Giza pyramids angle. I'm back there. So it is a lovely thing to do. Yeah, you could use duct tape. You could use duct tape around the. For instance, you could use duct tape on newspaper. That would make it stronger, and it would make it more waterproof. Calculus is about time. Yeah, it's about the area under the graph thing. Yeah, right, okay. Here's the bad news, right? If you want to make a copper pyramid, when I was making my last group of copper pyramids, which was about 2004, it cost me £70 for a pack of 10 copper tubes, and 10 copper tubes would make one pyramid plus two spare. So with every four packs, I would then have enough to make another pyramid. So that was the idea. People would commission me, and they'd pay me up front for the tubes, and then I would work, and they pay me then afterwards for the work that I did of putting the thing together. And I made a small batch. I don't think I managed to get to my free one, but essentially I made them 6 feet, and the 6 feet ones were. They stand about 4 feet six, I think. So you can't stand up in one. 7 foot six one makes about 5 foot six. You can just about stand up in that, but you can very comfortably put a chair into one of those. I've got a few pictures somewhere on the web. Well, if anybody's got any problems with the mathematics, I can help them, really. But essentially, what you come down to is it's only made of eight pieces of tubing, and the eight pieces of tubing are cut to two different lengths. So there's only one bit of measuring, you know, two bits of measuring that you need to do. With the copper tubing, you can get a very convenient and extremely accurate cutter, which even rounds the end off so that you don't get a sharp edge. Can you just easily get a little bit of sandpaper and smooth that down? Basically you take these eight pieces of copper tubing. Ah, I didn't talk about the price. At that time, back in 2004, the price of copper was such that you could get a pack for £70. So 70 British pounds is about, I'd say, $110. But now it's up to £150 for the same pack. You can shop around, obviously, but generally there's a bit of a cartel with the copper tubing, and it's priced according to the price of copper, which is now quite an expensive raw material. So in British pounds it's around £150, and so that's about $220 American or thereabouts. So that's how much it would really, you know, aside from a couple of brass bolts, that's what it cost you. In fact, the last time I built one, I made it using, instead of using nuts and bolts to put it together, I made a series of split pins. I just took some very thick copper wire that I took from an old piece of household electric cable. You know, you strip down that and you get nice, lovely, fresh copper. And I folded it into a couple of pins, you just poke them through the holes, and it'll tie the whole thing together very quickly and you can do that with your fingers without needing a spanner. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, if anybody's in the States, and go to a DIY site, and if you can, post in the chat room how much it would cost for a pack of 10 copper tubes of 13 millimeters. That's the stuff that I used. You can get the larger stuff. I think it's 18 mil. I don't know, what is it, 15 mil, I think, is the standard for the copper tubing nowadays. It's got a 1 millimeter thick copper wall, so it's 13 millimeters on the inside. So if anybody's got a price of a pack of those from your local DIY store, can somebody post that into the chat room if they can see that? That would be cool. So, yeah. You can make your own pyramid, and the way I did it, I have an old iron vise, I was able to squeeze the ends of the copper tubing very accurately. It's really important to be very accurate with these things. And then I made a little jig. I had a long bench. So you need a long bench because you're working with things that are long, you know. 7 feet 6 is quite a long length. You know, and the pipes come at 10 feet, so there's quite a lot of space you need for one of these. But anyway, in the vise, I had a jig which would, if I put one end and squeezed it flat, and then I would take the turn it round, and at the other end I would have a little jig that would hold the piece very vertical, because if it was slightly off, it would be twisted, and it would have you wouldn't be able to put it together very easily. So it's important to take care when you're making these things to make sure that everything is exactly aligned. Then once the ends were flattened, I would drill because you flatten down the last inch of it, and it would make a perfect square. And they punch it with a center punch, and then you drill it to make an accurate little hole right in the middle. And once you've done that with all the 8 pieces, you then bend 4 of them at 45 degrees, and the other 4 at 42 and 48 degrees. And lo and behold, you can pin that together with the pins that you made from copper, and voila, you have your own copper pyramid. Now, if anybody can afford it but can't make it, I can make one for them for you. But if you're interested, I'm sure that people all over, you know, All Spirit Radio listeners should be building pyramids. I firmly believe it. It's very good for you. It's good for the mind. It increases your mental clarity, not only to sit in one but to build one. I'd really enjoy that. Yep, that's true. You can get copper pipe from vacant houses, and this is something that Cliff High was talking about. Strip mining malls. You know, because there's disused buildings with vast, you've got kilometers of copper tubing in them that is now useless. And these pipe cutters are brilliant. You know, you can not that I'm advocating going around and stealing copper tubing, but you can go around and steal copper tubes from disused buildings, and it's just as good. And sometimes it's even come painted, so that might be fun as well. Yeah, welding is not so easy. That's for making the small ones that go on your head. That requires a little more skill. But if you made pyramids and you were able to advertise either locally in the local kind of health food shop or health center, there are meditators all over the place who are just looking for something like this. And you can, if you made them funky, you know, if you made them nice colors, or managed to get them gold plated, or filed them down and sanded them down, polished them up, and then varnished them, you know, they could look quite fantastic in somebody's house. The 7'6" size, you could put around a double bed. That makes a wonderful sleeping thing. You could use that in a meditation room. You can get 3 or 4 people inside a 7'6" one. There are other things you can do with the larger pyramids as well. You can make a capstone, for instance, out of copper plate. I made one out of copper tape that is used to keep slugs away. It's just copper tape, like aluminium tape. Sorry. Someone was stealing the pipes in Wolf Baby's block, only it wasn't vacant. Yeah, somebody. That's very funny. Oh, right, yes, that's what happens. So, did anybody get the price of copper? On that? Yes. It is a huge problem with rocketing metal prices. Exactly. Metal is a very precious commodity, so if you do have a whole bunch of stuff in the backyard and you're feeling poor, go and talk to your local scrap metal merchant, because scrap metal is very, very in demand nowadays. And household copper, if you've had, for instance, a new central heating system installed and they've replaced the pipes, the copper pipes with plastic pipes, for instance, don't let them throw the copper pipes away. Take them and you can sell them, because the scrap value is very high at the moment. Huh. Well, how did I get from Mars to selling metal? That's right. It is very expensive. Yes, that's right. So, and Simon or Nim, could you get a price on B&Q? On the copper tubing over here, just for the crack. Can somebody get us a dollar price for the American side, just to see what it's like, and compare what it's like across the pond, and also Canada. Yeah, that's right. It is quite expensive, but household piping is it's a necessary building requirement, and. Although it's being replaced nowadays by plastic pipes, it's still used very extensively. And so it is possible to get hold of this stuff quite easily, and therefore you can quite easily make your own copper pyramid. Right, so where are we? Let's have a quick sip of tea. Well, actually we say copper pennies are now no longer... pennies in Britain are now made of a ferrous material, a ferrous alloy. They'll stick to magnets. You can tell the difference between the old ones and new ones, because the new ones will stick to magnets and the old ones won't. So that's how you can tell which ones are made of copper. And even if the currency goes down, get hold of your coins, check them against magnets, and the ones that don't stick to magnets are likely to be real. There are many sites that will tell you what coins are made of at certain periods of time. For instance, I have in my possession a 2-shilling piece, and I thought, oh, a florin. I wonder what that's worth. Is it made of silver? And no, it's made of nickel something. It's worth nothing, you know. It's like 1946 they stopped making them out of silver, or something ridiculous, a really long time ago. I was quite disappointed that they weren't silver. Copper tubing, copper wire taped PVC pipes, that's a good idea. In fact, let's talk about the Russian pyramids, because I did mention it in the publicity. What they discovered in a Russian university was that if you made anything out in the pyramid form, it has a good effect. And they discovered that you could take PVC pipe and fiberglass sheeting, which is probably one of the cheapest ways of making a cladding material. And they made these huge towers from them. Now, they were very much more kind of obelisk-like. They were, quite pointy, much more pointy than the 51-degree slope. More of a, that would be like a kind of 80-degree, a 70 or 80-degree slope. But they made them out of plastic pipe and fiberglass. But they still had an effect. One of the things that they discovered was that these pyramids, and so they made them how big, about, you know, maybe 50 feet high, and they noticed that around the area where they were, there wasn't any bad weather. It stabilized all the weather that came near it, and even storms that would approach would separate into two bits and join up on the other side. It was like there was a bubble around this thing. And of course, those of us who have been studying chi and organite realize that this is exactly what's happening. It's creating a toroidal field, and it causes the weather to avoid it, basically. And another thing that they found, now I can't remember the name of the stone, I think it was granite. They got some granite blocks, and they put the granite blocks into these fiberglass and plastic pipe pyramids, and they left them there for a particular amount of time, and then they would take these blocks and... No, I think they either build prisons from it, or they would put them somewhere in the prison. And they discovered that when they were building them, you know what I'm going to say, that the prisoners were happier, and they would, you know, they would get off, you know, on good behavior and things like that, and they'd be kind of more cured and things like that. So even the pointy little plastic pyramids that they make in Russia still have an effect. So obviously the material can be significant, but the form is more significant. So that's why you can make one out of little... another way of making one, if you want to make a small head pyramid, I've just thought about this, you can get bamboo sticks, which are perfectly round and pretty well straight. They're used for planting. You know, you stick them in the pot next to your plant. They're pretty cheap. I saw a pound for about 30, you know, they're pretty nice sticks to work with, because, you know, most of them are pretty straight. You've got a few bad ones, but you can get some good straight ones. You can then make your pyramid up out of those. You could glue the ends, for instance, and then you could cover that with copper tape. That is, as I said, you can get copper tape that is about an inch wide, and it's used in garden centers for repelling slugs. So you could use this copper tape, and you could make a very low budget, very light, but effective copper pyramid. So there you go, there's a cheap one. So now let's have a look at time is just past the hour, so I'm going to play a tune. What was I going to play? There was a tune that I had queued up, but I used it, so let's forget that one. Let's have... now I can't even think of what I want to play. There we go. Let's have The Pretenders with Private Life.
I'm very superficial, I hate anything official. mama, baby, leave him out. Mama, baby, leave me now. Your private life, mama, baby, leave me now. Sentimental gestures only for me today. You've made a desperate appeal, now save your breath. Attachment to obligation, through guilt and regret, shit got so wet. And your sex thought complications are not my fascination.
No, we're not having we're not having Sweet Dreams. We're just sticking with Pretenders. Two of my favourite female singers, by the way, Annie Lennox and, of course, before that, Chrissy Hynde with The Pretenders and Private Life. So, Pyramids. All right, I'm going to post a link here, which is a link to my Facebook page, which has... which has my pyramid, and you can see very carefully, you can see very closely its construction. Do feel free to browse that while I'm talking about these things. Yes, Home Depot. So if you get to Home Depot, there are a few tools that you need, and you also might need to have some kind of way of setting up something that can hold the other end. You have to be creative. I mean, personally, I took some scrap bits of copper tubing, hammered them flat, and then bent them at various things and made holes in them use them, because copper is really easy to work with. You know, you can bend it with your hands, you don't need really strong vices and other things. So using a vice and various bits of copper tubing, drilling a hole and things, I made various jigs that, for instance, would hold, you crush one end of the tube and you'd have to flip it over, and it needed to be held at the other end exactly in the right in the right vertical, so that the two ends would be exactly parallel. That's really quite important when you're building these things, is to get the ends really parallel. It's not easy. All right, so there's a pyramid calculator there. My speakers just blew up. Hang on. What happened? What happened? My speakers didn't blow up. Oh, what's happened? Oh, but hang on, are you able to hear us? Yes. Oh, hang on. So you did. Everybody lost the stream. What happened? Oh, damn it. Terribly sorry about that. yeah, for some reason, I had a stop streaming command instead of a player stop command. That cut me off. Hang on. Sorry. Please refresh if needed. Okay. I knew I couldn't do one show without a major technical cock-up going on. Now, where are we? So, yes. Copper tape, hacksaw, little pipe, drill. Well, you know, I've got an electric drill driver, and you know, you can get these. You need high speeds. You just need a steel bit rather than a wood bit. But even a wood bit would work on copper because it's really soft. I wouldn't recommend it, but you can use. It's not difficult to work copper. That's what I'm saying. It's a really nice material to work with. So, did I... Yes. All right. Sorry about the silence, people. I accidentally cut off the streamer here. Yeah, so basically the tools that you'll need to make a pyramid are pretty basic. With the best thing to cut the thing with, rather than a hacksaw, because if you try and cut with a hacksaw, if you're anything like me, it'll come out cockeyed, and if it comes out not straight, you have to spend energy straightening it. So it's always best if you're going to cut something, to cut it really well. For instance, if you're cutting wood, use a jig or a miter block to cut exact right angles and things like that. So the best tool to work this copper is what's called a pipe cutter. It's a little spring-loaded thing, and you snack it around the pipe, turn it two or three times, and a lovely little metal wheel cuts the thing exactly right and curls in the edge. It's a beautiful little tool, very clever, and it's very, very quick. Very, very quick to use and very, very accurate. You can get it to the millimeter. So that's what I'd recommend for cutting. Rather, you know, really, you know, you wouldn't need to use a hacksaw much. An electric drill driver is pretty cheap. You can get, well, in Britain you can get one for about 10 to 12 pounds, usually in one of the cheap shops like Lidl's or B&Q. I've had one I got from Lidl's like 3 years ago, and it's still going strong. It's great. It drills and it screws. It's got torque controls and all sorts of things. So you can get these pretty cheap things. Another thing is that you'd need is something like a vise. You could probably get away with using a large G-cramp, you know. So basically it's a thing that will turn and squeeze something that you can use to squish the ends. And the more accurate you can, the better. I use an old iron vise that I mounted sideways so that I could get the length of the bench. And it's just perfect for that. And when you crush a 15 millimeter pipe, you get a 1 inch square end. That end you can then drill. Now, before you drill it, use a center punch. Again, these will cost you a couple of bucks, and it's just a very hard steel point that you hit with a hammer, and that will get you an exact point where you can start your drill, because otherwise the drill will kind of jump around, and it'll be less accurate. The more accurate you can get, the easier it will be to put the thing together. Believe me. It might be well to take some scraps and practice first. The scraps that you're using when you cut a 10-foot pipe to make a 7-foot, you get 2'6" of scraps. Use that to practice your pipe cutter skills, and also your squishing and drilling and joint making skills. I really do recommend. It's a very, very easy easy job. Yes, one step at a time. Absolutely, Lady Catherine. Yeah. Well, like I said, you know, you can improvise with things. I mean, be creative. I'd love to see little YouTube accounts of all of you guys building your pyramids. You know, all you need to do is take some photographs with your phone. Most people have got a phone with a camera in them. Take some photographs with your phone as you're doing this thing, and get a little piece of music, and you can even take some music from my website. I've got plenty of music you can use for free, and make a slideshow, and entertain everybody else with how you built your pyramid and how you're going to use it and where it's going to go in your house. And maybe you could use that as an advertising medium to make pyramids for people in town. I mean, there's so many things you can do. Like I was saying making pyramids for other people, you can advertise in places where you'd be likely to find people that might be interested in pyramids. And you'd be surprised, but there are places, maybe martial arts places, that the masters would know, because they do meditation, and there may be other meditation groups that you might not have heard of. Be creative. I mean, really, really, be creative, because there are people around there who have money, who want to get into this stuff and do meditation and things like that, and would be willing to pay people for your help, really. You would be helping them do their ascension process. Using a pyramid is very good. Like I said before, if you're sitting in a pyramid, you can't have a negative thought. I've tried it. When I first started building these things, I was thinking, what is it? How can I work this thing? How can I use this thing? The idea of, you know, oh, let's try and think bad thoughts, and it just wouldn't happen. You know, I'd just start laughing or doing something silly. So it's a very, very interesting little process. Yes, steel wool. Yes. So if you're able to get the stuff. So now Orgonite. Let's have a quick word about the Etheric Weaver systems. This is another thing that I've been getting involved in, and one or two of you actually have one that I've made, and it's a system. It's a small pendant, and there's a double terminated crystal in there, and the crystal has magnets surrounding it, and then there's a set of coils that extend away from the magnet part, and essentially these are like little resonators. They act as an amplifier, and you could have, for instance, you could have one of those at each corner of the pyramid. You could have one at each end of each of the rod pieces. So you'd have a total of 16 of these etheric weavers. You know, one at the top, one at the bottom, and that would again amplify the effect inside and really create a really good strong vortex. The vortex appears like a it's a bit, if you imagine the pyramid and then imagine underneath it is another pyramid, like a reflection, as if you were to put the pyramid on a mirror. That's what is known as the etheric pyramid. The vortex is formed between the tip of the apex of the 3D pyramid and the apex of the etheric pyramid, and that forms a vortex that is like, if you imagine the string or elastic band stretched between those two points, and then you pluck that, you would see the string vibrating backwards and forwards. And anybody who knows about music, if you were to do that with any string, there are two points on the string, well, three points really, but there's one which is known as the octave, and that is if you touched the string exactly in the center, the string would vibrate in two pieces. You'd get two perfect vibrations, and that also would be the octave above it. And that's called the first harmonic. And then the second harmonic occurs at the one-third point, so a third of the way along the string. Now, if you were to take that and then project that back into the pyramid, your vortex would have a resonant point which was exactly one-third of the way between the apex of the 3D pyramid with the apex of the etheric pyramid. And that is where the King's Chamber is situated. So, I hope you got that. That's a very useful idea. Right, can we use 90-degree connectors from the base? Yes, you could, but you also need the 42 and 48 degrees for the sidearms. And believe me, I've tried various different methods, and using the squished and flattened method is by far the easiest and least hassle, because if you wanted to make one out of copper, you'd have to solder the copper ends together, and that is quite a job. Believe me, I've done it. It's a job. You don't want to do it. So it's a very yeah, you can benefit from my experience, but if you want to do one, I can give you plans for a really super-duper one, which has octahedrons at each corner. That's quite a pyramid, and you could even gold-plate that and have something very funky. You have four octahedrons at each corner, and you can put crystals in the octahedrons and, you know, just spark it up. You can have a capstone on the top of that. You could have five pyramids soldered together to make a sort of further cap, which is what do they call that, the earth star, I think. Anyway, basically you have four pyramids facing outwards, and then one facing upwards that sits on the top of that I mean, there's all sorts of things you can do. You can attach etheric weavers to the middle of it. You can attach etheric weavers to every point on it. And then you sit in the middle. Like I said, this resonant point, which is called the King's Chamber position, that's where your heart is. And if you can sit in a pyramid and have that all sparking away, that it that has an effect on your heart, it will, you know, just basically it will resonate with your heart. You will resonate in joy, essentially. It will also, you know, stop the mind. It really brings you into your heart, because if your mind is not sitting there bitching about stuff, it gives yourself a chance to hear and feel the pulsing of your heart. All right, hang on, we have a question here. Great Pyramid at Giza, this is from Catherine. Great Pyramid of Giza has a slight dip towards the center of each of the sides that apparently mean that it really has 8 sides. Have I tried making one that shape? No, except when the cows trampled it. I think they were trying to do that. But yes, there is a kind of indentation, like a groove in it. But we have to be aware, like I said, that the original pyramid was encased in limestone. We're not to know whether that's not just the key to hold the limestone in, this little dip here, and that the actual sides were on the outside, they were flat, but this might maybe like a little key that holds the limestone part in. I don't know, I'm just guessing, I really don't know. The answer to your question, have I tried making one that shape, is no, and I have no idea why that is. Yeah, so there's all sorts of stuff. Think of the crystal or the Caribbean. Yes, so essentially, basically, if you've got anything that will generate a vortex at the top of your pyramid, you could have you could hang a little crystal Merkaba. If you can find a way of super gluing a little bit of fishing line to one of the points of your crystal star tetrahedron, you could then put a little loop on it, and you could hang that on things. That would be an ideal thing, for instance, to put inside the tip of your pyramid. Again, as I said, I made a pyramid from bamboo sticks, and then I stretched copper tape around the outside, and I think, indeed, that's in that picture collection. You can see the from my Facebook picture correct collection that you can see that there's a you can see the construction of the copper tape pyramid as I made the different sides and put it together. It's kind of sticky on the inside, but I've still got that. I don't wear that on my head because it's sticky on the inside, and it's now got no pyramid to sit on top of. Sadly, one day there will be more. I will do that. I really will. So, another possible experiment. Yeah. Cows were not good. That didn't work for me when the cows came in and invaded. Actually, it didn't work for anybody. Everybody was upset about it. The farmer was upset. Nick was upset because they'd also trampled his garden. Massive great footprints, because it was during a rainstorm, so all the ground was really wet, and so everything was a mangled mess, including my pyramid, which is very, very sorry for itself. It looks like a kind of broken metal octopus. So, does it matter who Leo is? Hello, Leo. Thank you, Tobias. So, yes, indeed, building your own pyramid is a highly recommended thing. There's theories that it civilized the world. I'm not entirely sure about that, but certainly it had a very profound influence on the way I was thinking, my emotional state, because, you know, I was just an ordinary guy doing this, and, you know, I had my regular programming, and, you know, doing these things, it cuts into that programming. It really does bring it up, and you can get very upset with these things, and it brings up your emotional stuff, and there's no one to blame. You know, you have to face it and deal with it. So it's, for so many reasons, it's good to build pyramids. Yes. So, yes, the Bosnian pyramids. Anyway, I was going to do a little brief part about the Scientologists. And it's only, I was just made aware of, I've seen this before, and I was aware of it. Because we're coming up to the old, 2012 and the inception of the New World Order and all that business that they want to push, I heard that Scientology was one of the religions that had been mooted for the New World Order. It's absolute balderdash. It really is. It would be interesting for me, I think, would you be interested, if I read you the real secrets of the Scientologists, what they really believe. And this, it's going to blow your mind. If you don't know about this stuff, it's going to blow your mind. If you do know about this stuff, you're going to roll on the floor laughing. It's just crazy. So, visualizing a pyramid surrounding you have any effect? Yes, it does. Stuart Swerdlow, one of our co-hosts here, recommends imagining yourself inside a pyramid that would be made, imagine, of violet plexiglass. That's not a pyramid, but a tetrahedron. And then you put an octahedron around that. That's two pyramids. So if you imagine a massive pyramid and pyramid beneath you made of violet plexiglass. And violet, he says, is the color of amethyst. That's your protection. And that would protect you very well. But yes, people use visualizations of being inside pyramids as well. The better you can visualize a pyramid, if you couldn't visualize a pyramid as an octahedron with this vortex that is spinning around on the inside of it, that is tuned and sounds like a spinning top or something like that, that would be a great meditation for you. That would be a good protection. It would, because you'd be able to tune the vortex to the vibration that you wished, that makes you feel safe and comfortable. Meanwhile, the Scientologists. I have to tell you this because if you were to hear this anywhere else, and you'd think that it was just a joke, really. But let me just see if I can find it. I had the page earlier and I've completely lost it. Right. My computer crashed earlier and I lost the page of which I had this, so I now have to go back through my history and look through this. But anyway, Scientology was created by a man named L. Ron Hubbard. L stands for Lafayette, which is why he probably called himself Ron. He has a bit of a history. He was a friend of Aleister Crowley and Jack Parsons, and they came up with all sorts of stuff. And if you were to believe what's going around, Aleister Crowley has managed to reincarnate or transincarnate between his body and a clone body that is currently running CERN and whatever they're doing there. We're going to have a quick look at L. Ron Hubbard. Now, he was a sci-fi writer, and he wrote it's really cheap sci-fi, honestly. But the story behind behind what he did is one day he came up with this idea that there was a ruler, a king. His name is variously spelt Zeno, something like XENU or XEMO or something like that. But I'll call him Zeno. That seems to be the common pronunciation. He was the dictator of a galactic confederacy 75 million years ago. And I think he basically had this in a sort of vision somewhere. He probably took something that Jack Parsons gave him, I don't know. one of Crowley's magic potions that probably involved lots of cocaine and heroin and stuff. Anyway, 75 million years ago, Xenu brought billions of people to Earth, which was called at that time Tegia or something, Tegia or something. He took these people, and they were kind of in a sort of semi-zombie-like state, and he stacked them around volcanoes and set off hydrogen bombs in these volcanoes. Now, here's the story, is that the essence of these people remained, and that they still are here in our world, and they these energies form around people in modern times and cause them spiritual harm. And these entities, the spirits of the dead people, were mind controlled. You know, they were brainwashed into thinking certain things, and that these then became our predominant belief systems and our belief patterns, and that in order to be they possess modern day people, which is why people are so kind of stuck on religion and things like that, because they're possessed by these entities which are called Thetans or Thetans. Now, the word, they use a thing called an OT, which is an operating Thetan, which means that, you know, that if you're clear. They got these clears, right? So there's a clear and there's an operating Thetan. And essentially that the idea of if you give them $100,000, you can get to about the clear level, and probably a sum that is equally huge or equally more huge to get to the next level, the operating Thetan. And also says that if you try and get by it yourself, you'll die of pneumonia or anything like that. So it's very much a belief system that is very cleverly put into your mind. One of the things is that the Scientology company, corporation, really regards this information as a trade secret. This is the thing that really gets me. That information that I just gave you is a trade secret, and the nature of the way that they get these Thetans to make you clear that you have to pay $10,000 for, is to use some kind of lie detector. It's like a polygraph, but it basically measures a skin resistance or something like that. And you basically have to learn how to control your body, to control the machine, to clear these things out. So, that's Scientology. Oh, you're still talking about copper pyramids. All right, maybe I should go back to talking about tubes and copper. Yeah, it seems to be more onto that. Anyway, so that's the Scientologists. Mormons. Now, I have had some experience with the Mormons, and I met a few in years gone by that were actually of a kind of breakaway group from the main church, and they still practice polygamy and the what they call the United Order, which is like essentially it's like a communal fund. It's like instead of, you know, they put their money together, essentially, and they use it en masse. It's like, you know, having a community co-op where somebody, you know, bothers to buy enough toilet paper for 20 houses, and it's enough, you know, you save lots of money. So that's essentially how they deal with that. Ah, yes, paid and loan. Zeno, the giant bug god. All right. So yes, where are we? You're talking about right? Okay, yeah. Yes, staffs. Yes, we'll talk about staffs. Trem, you know, if you want to talk about staff. Well, we've already had a little conversation about that. So, yeah, the beliefs of a Mormon are quite interesting. The idea was that there was this fellow, and at the age of 16, he was living in upstate New York, and he met an angel, as you do when you're the leader of a cult. They always meet angels or an extraterrestrial, and they tell him stuff, and then they sort of run down the hill and saying, oh, I found the answer to the world. Anyway, so what this angel said is like, here's a book that is made of gold plates, and it's written in this language which is called compressed hieroglyphs, and you use these two stones, he says, to read them and to understand them. And the stones, they were called the Urim and the Thummim, and or otherwise known as seer stones. And he was then magically able to translate these books, or at least one third of this golden book. Now, it was really interesting, is that when he did start to talk about this stuff, that was about 1820 or something, the idea of a book that was made of metal was completely unheard of. Only quite recently have books that are made of copper scrolls, been discovered, which do verify the idea that in order to make something that would last a long time, you would have to put it on a metal, because anything, you know, paper or book or anything like that would easily crumble to dust over the years. So a metal book would last thousands of years, definitely. So anyway, there was apparently this book, and the local public notary, you know, witnessed it. Yes, this is a book, weighs about 50 pounds. You have to cart it around everywhere, and it's got these squiggles and dots on it. And Joseph translated these into the Book of Mormon. Mormon was the name of the person who gathered the books of which the book was a composite of. It's like a compilation, like a, what's the word? A digest, like Reader's Digest, essentially. You know, it's like a Reader's Digest version of history, the great encyclopedia of all things that have happened to us since we left Babylon. And essentially it talks of a people who left Babylon 600 BC, traveled across the Atlantic in submarines, and arrived and populated the Americas many hundreds of years ago. Many thousands of years ago, and eventually died out. So they have all these little things they call ordinances, and the ordinances are you know, things that are ordained. You know, a thing that is ordained. So, for instance, they all have to wear the garment. I never quite got the garment. Essentially, the underwear that most men from Northern England wear, like long johns and t-shirts, essentially, or long sleeved t-shirts. And my cat's trying to tell me something. I don't know what she's saying. The idea was that they wore a special temple garb to keep themselves kind of fresh and pure and clean. Hello. sorry, the cat's appearing in a very uncharacteristic... I think she needs some water or something. So we have this group, And he gathered a bunch of people around him who believed him, who saw the book, they helped him to translate the book. He put one of the crystals in his hat or something.
Where are you going?
One of the crystals in his hat, and held one in his hand, and he translated this book, and he said he translated about a third of it, and that's what became the Book of Mormon. And it's essentially the story of the house of Israel, or the children of Israel, who escaped Jerusalem and Israel before the sacking, before Babylon, and escaped to the Americas and formed colonies there, who have subsequently died out, but the book apparently remained as a record of them. Some of the dodgy things in the book were the here's the kicker. The idea is that Jesus, having been crucified and ascended, ascended from Israel and then descended into this place called Manti, which I actually visited in 1997. And then he gives, apparently, verbatim, the same Sermon on the Mount as he gave at the other thing, you know. It's just another gig. And then, you know, shook hands with people and then shot off back into the sky. So the idea is that the Book of Mormon is a kind of companion to the Old and New Testament, and that it's got lots of pearls of wisdom. And then there's the various other books that they have as their scriptures, they call them. So that's what they kind of believe in, that they believe that there was another civilization, Israelite civilization, and that they practiced what is known as the temple religion. And the temple religion is what we call Masonism nowadays. And they tried to create what was, in their minds, a pure form of Masonism. And as we now know, that seems to be Luciferic teaching. A purer form of the temple religion, in the hope that it will bring Jesus back, as they all do. So, there's Mormonism. Am I familiar with astrotheology? I have heard of astrotheology, and I can't remember what it's about. You're obviously unfamiliar with this show, Leo, because one of the many things that I talk about are the seven rays, and they kind of encompass all of the different energetic thoughts and religions. So somewhere astrotheology will have a kind of place in this whole cosmogony. So the whole thing about the Mormons is that it keeps you busy, because they've got scads of scriptures, you know. One of the interesting things is that they are all very kind of learned. They do a lot of reading, although they're kind of fanatical. They do a lot of reading, and so they are very well versed. Literally, you know, they're able to quote you Book of Mormon chapter and verse, Bible chapter and verse, and all these other things. It's a very efficient indoctrination program that happens from an early age. The original ideas of polygamy were taken from the first commandment, which they say was "Go forth and multiply." And that's the justification for polygamy. That's what the thing. So multiplication, if you can do addition and subtraction, that might be good. And watch out with the division. how bored you have to be. So the Scientologists is a is very much of a scam, whereas the Mormonism is very much of a complete kind of mind control situation. That, you know, what I mean about complete, it has a lot of, you know, the answers are all there. There's a lot of books that are, for instance, not mentioned in the Old Testament, but do appear as reference in the Old Testament, including the book called the Book of Enoch, and various other books of sons of Noah and all those things that were lost in the Council of Nicaea because they didn't quite agree and they became apocryphal, which is like, you know, this is the etc. This is the miscellaneous, the jazz part of the Bible, and actually they're quite interesting. And they have other ideas about the nature of divinity and stuff like that. So it's quite interesting. Oh, yes, the polygamy. Yeah, all right, go on. Enjoy. Dark fucking night of the night. Yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of things that you might disagree with, and there's a lot of things that you might think, oh, that's intense, and there's a lot of things you might think that's quite a good idea. They're very strong on education, they're very strong on travel, they're very strong on independence and independence of building a house and you know, being a householder and all of those things. So there are some noble aspirations in these things, but like Scientology, it's based on somebody making something up, probably. But even if it is, we here at Ever Beyond don't like we don't like dogma. We don't go for dogma. If we can get away with it, we can see if we can reduce everything through a series of observations so that you can understand and make your own choices given all the truth of the situation. So, oh wow, we're only about 9 minutes away from the end. Oh yes. A very brief synopsis of the seven rays. Okay. Well, I do have quite a few archives. If you look at the Ever Beyond with JP archives, I do quite a few intros. In fact, if you go to my website, which is sevenrays.info, you'll find a couple of shows, and I would recommend the show that I did recently with Kathy Buckaloo, giving an introduction to the seven rays. It's, you know, it'd take a while, and I do quite a good exposition on it. On that interview, I'll see if I can get a link to it into the chat room just now, so that we can move on a little bit. Because now, once people get into understanding there we go. Yeah, I'll just paste that into the chat room now. There we go. So that's the link to the Catwoman. Yes, that's a link to a very good introduction of the seven rays, and I'd actually like somebody to type that up if anybody's good at doing copy typing. I was asking, somebody was mentioning that the other day. Anyway, yes, that would be great. Alright, so please look at the Santos Bonacci YouTube for astrotheology. This man, yeah. Generally, it's good to post links. We'll talk about the topic that we're talking about rather than talking about other people's stuff. But anyway, yeah, very intelligent man. Yes, that's good. So, 1653. Now, how am I doing with the Mormon thing? Have I dumped all the Mormon stuff? Oh yeah, the Mormons really think a lot of Israel, and they venerate Hebrews, which is why there's a lot of support for Israel in the Mormon community. That's why you see Mitt Romney kissing the Wailing Wall and things like that. It would probably be very difficult to separate the two. So essentially, if you're voting for a Mormon, you're voting for Israel, I'd say. If you don't support Israel and what they're doing, then that might be a little clue as to, well, you know, really the whole political thing, the whole election thing, I don't think it's actually going to be relevant by the time it comes around in November. We're going to have a lot of changes till then. The idea of the two-party system might be obsolete by then. You never know. Would be nice. So, yes, so there you can see the clear line between the Zionist organizations and the Mormons and the Masons and stuff like that. So, any more questions from the chat room? Yes. Scientologists. Now, where the Scientologists fit in, I'm not entirely sure. But it would really, I mean, I suppose the story appeals to somebody who's maybe seen Star Wars and has opened their mind to a possible sci-fi kind of reality. And I think it's really the reality is somewhere in the realms of our sci-fi. Well, like Star Wars is not about a galaxy long ago and far away. It might have been about a galaxy long ago but quite close. You know, judging by the look of the moon, that might well be something like a Death Star. You know, it might be quite accurate. Who knows that George Lucas got something by accident or by design in his mind when he designed the Star Wars movies. You never know. It's an interesting thing. So, yes, all right. Okay, everybody's having chats about the rules. Oh, yes, clouds. There's been some great clouds recently. I don't know if you catch Facebook, and there's been, you know, people have posted some quite amazing clouds, and this lenticular formation of clouds. When there are very high winds, you get these what they call lenticular clouds. Lenticular mean the shape of a lentil or the shape of a lens, please be nice in the chat room. we don't like people to be rude. We like to keep it a kind of safe place for people. So lenticular clouds, and they also can stack up into these amazing things. So when I see these things, and you see them in Scotland quite a lot, the clouds here in Scotland are just incredible. It's worth living here just for the clouds, if not for the countryside and the pure water and the pure air and all the other wonderful things about living in Scotland. These clouds are quite something else, and it might, you know, you could see them and think, oh wow, is that a whole bunch of motherships? It certainly looked like that when you see them. Anyway, yes, the dark geometric ones. Oh, bye bye. So we're now at the end of the program. I'd like to thank you all for listening, for participating, and I really think it would be a great benefit if people started making pyramids for themselves, for their local country. It's a bit like organite. It produces chi. It purifies and generates chi in the local area. So with those thoughts, I'd like to thank you. If you wish a personal ray reading from me, please come to everbeyond.info. There you can also find links to various other information resources, and 7rays.info is another place where there's an information resource about the 7rays, of course. So, with that, I will leave you with 7 Steps to Heaven. Thank you very much, and I'll see you next week. Don't forget, join me on Tuesday on Revolution Radio with Journeys with JP.